Epilogue. Questions asked and answered. Some, at least. A final trip to Empus. 1. If you think that there are places in this story where it doesn't sound like a young man of 17 wrote them, you would be right. I returned from Empus 9 years ago. Since then, I've done a lot of reading and writing. I graduated from NYU cum laude, missed summa by a hair, with a degree in English. I'm now teaching at the College of Liberal Arts in Chicago, where I hold a well-attended seminar called Myth and Fairy Tales. I am considered quite the bright spark, mostly because of an expanded version of an essay I wrote as a grad student. It was published in the International Journal of Jungian Studies. The pay was bupkis, but the critical cred? Priceless. And you want to believe that I cited a certain book whose cover showed a funnel filling up with stars. Good to know, you might say, but I have questions. You're not the only one. I'd like to know how the reign of good Queen Leia is going. I'd like to know if the gray folk are still gray. I'd like to know if Claudia of the Galleon is still blaring. I'd like to know if the way to that horrible underground world, the lair of Gog-Magog, has been blocked up. I'd like to know who took care of the remaining night soldiers, and if any of my fellow prisoners from Deep Malene were in at their finish. Probably not, but a man can dream. I'd even like to know how the night soldiers opened our cells the way they did, by just extending their arms. You'd like to know how Radar's doing, I suppose. The answer is very well, thanks, although she's slowed down a bit. After all, it's been 9 years for her too, which makes her pretty dang old for a German Shepherd, especially if you add her old life and her new one together. You'd like to know if I told my father where I'd been for those 4 months. The answer, if I may borrow from the facial expression of a certain small sled-pulling kitty, is, duh. How could I not? Was I supposed to tell him that some miracle drug obtained in Chicago had changed Radar from an elderly arthritic dog at death's door into a hale and hearty German Shep who looked and acted about 4? I didn't tell him everything right away. There was far too much. But I was straight with him about the basics. There was a connection, I said, between our world and another. I didn't call it Empus, just the other, which was what I called it when I first came. I told him I'd gotten there from Mr. Bowditch's shed. He listened, carefully, then asked me, as you have surely guessed, where I'd really been. I showed him my arm and the deep divot above my wrist that will remain there for the rest of my life. That didn't convince him. I opened my pack and showed him the gold door knocker. He examined it, hefted it, and suggested, tentatively, that it must be a gilt-coated yard sale item actually made of lead. Break it open and see for yourself. Might as well. It'll have to be melted down eventually and sold. There's a bucket of gold pellets in Mr. Bowditch's safe from the same place. I'll show you that when you're ready to look. It's what he was living on. I sold some myself to a jeweler in Stantonville, Mr. Heinrich. He's dead now, so eventually I guess I'll have to find someone else to do business with. That got him a little farther down the road to belief, but what finally convinced him was Radar. She knew her way around our house to all her favorite spots, but the real convincer was the stippling of small scars on her snout from an unfortunate encounter with a porcupine when she was young. Some dogs never learn about those, but once was enough for raids. My dad had noticed them when we were keeping her after Mr. Bowditch broke his leg and after he died, when she was on the verge of stepping out. The same scars remained on the younger version, probably because I'd hauled her off the sundial before she reached and passed the age when she got a nose full of quills. Dad looked at them for a long time, then looked at me with wide eyes.
This is impossible.
I know it seems that way, I said.
There's really a bucket of gold in Bowditch's safe?
I'll show you, I repeated, when you're ready. I know, it's a lot to take in. He sat cross-legged on the floor, petting Radar and thinking. After a while, he said,
This world you claim to have visited is magic? Like Xanth in those Piers Anthony books you used to read in junior high? Goblins and basilisks and centaurs and all that?
Not quite like that, I said. I'd never seen a centaur in Empis, but if there were mermaids and giants...
Can I go there?
I think you have to, I said, at least once. Because Empis really wasn't much like Xanth. There was no Deep Maleen or Gogmagog in the Piers Anthony books. We went, a week later. The prince, who was a prince no longer, and Mr. George Reed of Reed Insurance. I spent that week eating good old American food and sleeping in a good old American bed, and answering questions from good old American cops. Not to mention questions from Uncle Bob, Lindy Franklin, Andy Chen, various school administrators, and even Mrs. Richland, the neighborhood nosy Parker. By then, my father had seen the bucket of gold. I also showed him the baby light, which he examined with great interest. Do you want to know the story I whomped up with the help of my dad, who just happened to be a crack insurance investigator, remember? A guy who knew a lot of the pitfalls liars fell into and thus how to avoid them? Probably you do, but let's just say that amnesia played a part, and add in how Mr. Bowditch's dog died in Chicago before I ran into trouble I can't remember. Although I do seem to remember being conked on the head. The dog my dad and I have now is Radar 2. I bet Mr. Bowditch, who came back to Century as his own son, would have liked that one. Bill Harriman, the reporter from the Weekly Sun, asked me for an interview. He must have had an in with one of the cops. I declined. Publicity was the last thing I needed.
Do you wonder what happened to Christopher Pauly? The nasty little Rumpelstiltskin who meant to kill me and steal Mr. Bowditch's treasure?
I did. And a Google search turned up the answer. If you think back to the beginning of my story, you may remember me being afraid that my father and I would end up homeless, sleeping under an overpass with all our possessions piled in a shopping cart. That didn't happen to us, but it did to Pauly. Although, I don't know about the shopping cart. The police found his body beneath a tri-state tollway overpass in Skokie. He had been stabbed repeatedly. Although he carried no wallet or identification, his fingerprints were on file, part of a long arrest record going back to his teens. The news article quoted Skokie Police Captain Brian Baker as saying the victim had been unable to defend himself because he had two broken wrists. I can tell myself that Pauly might not have survived his assailant's attack in any case. There wasn't much to him, and I'd taken his gun. But I can't be sure. Nor can I be sure that the motive of the killing was the swag from the jewelry store robbery. Did he talk about it to the wrong person in an attempt to sell it and pay with his life? I don't know. Can't know. But in my heart, I'm sure. I'm less sure that he died at the same time Red Molly was batting Peterkin out of her way with enough power to tear that unpleasant dwarf in half, but I think that may have been the way of it. I can tell myself Pauly brought it on himself, and that is true. But when I think of him raising his useless hands to ward off the knife strokes of whoever was kneeling over him in that trash-littered underpass, I can't help feeling sorry and ashamed. You may say I have no reason to feel shame, that I did what I had to do to save my life and the shed's secret. But shame is like laughter and inspiration. It doesn't knock. 2. On the Saturday after I came home, a big snowstorm swept in from the Rockies. My father and I tramped up to Mr. Bowditch's house, me wearing boots that didn't cramp my feet, and went around to the back. Dad regarded the busted outside of the shed with disapproval.
That'll have to be repaired.
I know, but it was the only way I could get out once Andy padlocked the door. There was no need of the baby light because we had two flashlights. We had left Radar at home. Once we came out of the tunnel, she would have made straight for the House of Shoes, and I didn't want to see Dora. I didn't want to see anyone from my time there. I just wanted to convince my dad the other world was real, and then get out. There was something else, too. Strange, and probably selfish. I didn't want to hear my father speaking Empisarian. That was mine. We went down the spiral stairs, me leading. My dad kept saying he couldn't believe it, just couldn't believe it. I hope to God I wasn't pushing him toward a mental breakdown, but given the stakes, I felt I had no choice. I still feel that way. In the tunnel, I told him to shine his light at the stone floor. Because there are bats. Big ones. I don't want them flying around us. Also, we're going to come to a place where you may feel dizzy, almost like an out-of-body experience. That's the crossover point.
Who made this?
He asked softly.
Jesus Christ, Charlie, who made this?
You might as well ask who made the world. Ours and others. I'm sure there are others. Maybe as many as there are stars in the sky. We sense them. They funnel down to us in all the old stories. We came to the crossover and he would have fallen, but I was ready and put my arm around his waist.
Maybe we should go back, he said. I feel sick to my stomach.
Just a little further. There's light up ahead, see? We came to the vines. I brushed them aside, and we stepped out into Empis, with a cloudless blue sky above us and Dora's house down the hill. There were no shoes hanging on her crisscrossing lines, but there was a horse grazing near King's Road. The distance was too great to be positive, but I'm pretty sure I knew that horse. And why not? The queen no longer needed Falada to speak for her, and a city is no place for a horse. My father was looking around, wide-eyed and slack-jawed. Crickets, not red ones, jumped in the grass.
My God, they're so big.
You should see the rabbits, I said. Sit down, Dad. Before you fall down, I didn't add. We sat. I gave him some time to take it in. He asked how there could be sky under the ground. I said I didn't know. He asked why there were so many butterflies, all of them monarchs, and I told him, again, that I didn't know. He pointed at Dora's house.
Who lives down there?
That's Dora's house. I don't know her last name.
Is she home? Can we see her?
I didn't bring you here for a meet and greet, Dad. I brought you so you'd know it's real. And we're never coming here again. No one from our world can know about this one. It would be a disaster.
Judging by what we did to a good many indigenous peoples, not to mention our own climate, I'd have to agree with you.
He was starting to take hold, and that was good. I'd been afraid of denial, or a terminal freakout.
What are you thinking about doing, Charlie?
What Mr. Bowditt should have done years ago. And why hadn't he? I think because of the sundial. The bad strain that lives in the hearts of every man and woman, Leah had said. Come on, Dad. Let's go back. He stood up, but paused for another look when I held aside the vines.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is, now, and it's going to stay that way. We would protect Empis from our world, and also protect our world, at least try, from Empis. Because below Empis is a world of darkness, where Gog Magog still lives and rules. It might never escape, now that Bella and Arabella have shared a final shattering kiss, but when it comes to such unknowable creatures, it's best to be careful. As careful as one can be, at least. That spring, my dad and I repaired the hole I'd made in the side of the shed. That summer, I worked for Kramer Construction, mostly in the office because of my arm, but I spent a fair number of hard-hat hours as well, learning all I could about concrete. A lot of stuff was on good old YouTube, but when you've got an important job to do, there's nothing like practical experience. 2 weeks before I left for my first semester at NYU, Dad and I placed pieces of sheet steel over the mouth of the well. 1 week before I left, we poured concrete over them and the entire floor of the shed. While it was still wet, I encouraged Radar to put her paw prints in it. I'm going to tell you the truth. Sealing that well under steel and 7 inches of concrete hurt my heart. Somewhere down below is a world full of magic and people I loved. One person in particular. As the concrete flowed sluggishly out of the mixer I'd borrowed from Kramer to do the job, I kept thinking of Leah, standing on the stairs, sword drawn, legs braced in a fighting stance, and of how she had cut open her sealed mouth to cry out her brother's name. I lied just now, okay? My heart didn't just hurt. It cried out, no, and no, and no. It asked how I could leave wonder behind and turn my back on magic. It asked if I really meant to plug the funnel the stars fall through. I did it because I had to. Dad understood that. 3. Do I dream, you ask? Of course. Some of them are of the thing that came out of the well, and I wake from those with my hands over my mouth to stifle my screams. But as the years pass, those nightmares come less. More often these days, I dream of a field blanketed in poppies. I dream of red hope. We did the right thing. I know that. The only thing. And still, my dad keeps an eye on the house at 1 Sycamore Street. I come back often and do the same. And eventually, I will come back to Century for good. I may marry, and if I have children, the house on the hill will go to them. And when they are small, and wonder is all they know, I will read them the old stories. The ones that start once upon a time. November 25th, 2020, through February 7th, 2022.